Late in August of this past year, I found myself in Novi Sad visiting an anthropologist and good friend of mine who lives in the area. Within hours of arriving, she announced that a well-known Serbian drummer would be coming by soon and that I was to interview him. I obliged, and what followed is the interview you're about to hear. The drummer in question is Ivan Firci, best known for playing in Luna and Ekaterina Velika, commonly known as EKV, one of the most influential rock acts in what was once Yugoslavia. Beloved by domestic and international audiences alike, Firci played in over half a dozen bands over the course of his career, starred in reality TV shows later on, and founded a well-known drum manufacturing company. He's a riot, and this was by far one of my favorite interviews to conduct. Given the lack of notice, I felt slightly underprepared. But rockstar schnapps and Novi Sad make for one hell of a combination. This one is a bit longer and a bit more historically focused than some other episodes, but I've chosen to include it in full for anybody interested in the 80s, in rock, and in the big questions. Firci's monologues are full of rich insights, hilarious anecdotes, and improbable stories that could only come from a man in his sixth decade of life who has, quite literally, seen it all, or at least most of it. Happy listening.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
The first question I have is just about setting the scene. Talk to me about what Yugoslavia was like in the 80s.
I'll quote Margita Magi, who I used to be in the band with. She said it simply the following way. She said, Yugoslavia was like a good old Cadillac. And everything that it represented in the heyday of Cadillacs. Like the synonymous with the Cadillac was everything. It was flashy and good and comfortable and easygoing. And you'd go for a ride for no reason. It was just a good old thing, you know, big and comfortable. I can't think of anyone who's within that generation that was an adult in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s that did not absolutely adore every aspect of living in Yugoslavia. There's a few things that need to be mentioned. The country was over some 24 million inhabitants. There was a federation of six republics and two provinces. Let's not mention them. They're all now countries, believe it or not. Man, it was a fairly powerful, well-organized, loving place, so to speak, with the cult of personality, of course, which is now taken out of the context because of the modern nationalistic thinking. It's only natural that after World War II, most leaders that were liberators from the Nazis naturally celebrated. Stalin was celebrated, Eisenhower was celebrated. He became the president after all, regardless of the system. Tito was a big liberator from the Nazis. So he was the president for life, big fucking deal. You know, it just happened to be. No one really complained. A few dissidents, a few political opponents that were shunned and jailed at the time were nothing compared to, it's my personal opinion, compared to what the greater good was given to the majority. So some people even speculated that the government during the 80s openly supported all the modern Western things such as rock and roll, because Tito was famous to say that we have neglected our youth. We have to listen to our youth. We have to listen to our students. They had every right to rebel. And the government simply did what Tito said because his word was the last mentioned. So the 80s, in a simple way of putting it, were good until the economy got screwed, because Tito died, and there was no such person who could take over the leadership, so to speak. And typically for such systems with such a huge cult of personality. They fought for who's going to be the next big deal. And see, what a funny thing to mention, that they had such a thing which has never been done ever in the history of mankind. They call it the presidency, so to speak, like the conjoined presidency, meaning that a representative of each republic and the province was a member of the presidency.
Mm.
And they all ran the country. Mm. One of them was the president of the presidency, but all of them had a say to it. I mean, it lasted for a few years, but of course then the Civil War destroyed everything. It was ridiculous. But it was sort of such a similar thing to, you must have heard the thing that when people are sick and dying, and it's a common knowledge that they say, funny, the last few days, he looked so good. And he was so energized. And he was talking as if no disease was present, right? You've heard it before.
Yeah, of course.
Such strange adrenaline enters our system.
Graduation goggles.
Yeah, and you're like, I feel good, and you're down.
Mm.
You know, next one. That's kind of the way I see Yugoslavia. The 80s were the explosion of everything that was good and positive and lovey-dovey, so that the end of the 80s, it simply died.
Mm.
But I'm not the one to tell you the last decaying reasons, because I left in 88, early 88. I should have left at the pinnacle of this whole thing. When the last tour ended, I picked up my stuff and I left for the States.
Mm.
So I was already nearly 3.5 years in the States when the Civil War broke out, you know. So it was a surprise to me. And the only thing I remember that was quote unquote bad was this strange thing that they had restrictions of gasoline.
Yeah.
They call it even odd numbers. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, only people with license plates ending with an even number or odd number could ride. And Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, the the even numbers could ride. And Sundays for all. So that's a strange thing that I hated. And that was like, well, no one thought of it too big of a deal, you know. Just like any crisis, it comes and goes.
Mm.
And that's about it. You know, the 80s were the last adrenaline rush of a dying man. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the graduation goggles phenomenon. And, you know, it gets me thinking about the dichotomy. Perhaps people look at the 80s as this great, beautiful Cadillac because what came after was such a fucking disaster.
I'm sorry to cut in. They did call it a Cadillac, not knowing it's going to be a disaster. During the Cadillacy, they called it Cadillac.
Ah.
It wasn't like
it in wasn't
comparison
after the fact.
To the 90s.
Okay.
While the 80s were happening, she called it, oh, what do you think of these days? You know, how do we feel like? Oh, I feel like we're riding a big old Cadillac. You know?
Mm.
Of course, it's more apparent and obvious that anything's better than Civil War.
Yeah, the Cadillac gets even more shiny when you compare it to the
chrome,
the shitbox that comes
shiny,
after.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, it was a surprise to you. You were surprised by what happens next. Were you really
absolutely
that surprised? Was it just
it was a
confronting and a shock?
It was more than a surprise. And I'll tell you what, because we were all brought up brainwashed or convinced, however you want to call it, to think of our society as a loving one. And I should add, my personal belief was such as even today, I have super close, emotionally close friends from all the former
Yugoslav
republics.
Yeah.
Right. So that didn't disappear because of whatnot. And whoever was fine before is still fine today, but the majority of the Yugoslav people were taught all of their lives that we call it in the Serbo-Croatian language, call it Bratstvo Jedinstvo, which literally translates brotherhood and unity.
Mm.
So the all the nationalities of the Yugoslav people, which is Roman Catholic and Serbian Orthodox and Jewish and whatnot, in Vojvodina alone, there's some like 30 nationalities plus living, and you never heard such a thing that anyone hated anyone because of their national background or ethnicity or any such thing. And all of a sudden, in the early 90s, CNN sends the news that there's some shooting at the Yugoslav army by the Slovenians or something who want to secede. I'm like, what is this, joke? You know, what the hell? And it all went haywire within a few months. That's it. Later, we found out that they all planned this for quite some time because the nationalistic mind always plans in the background. You know, they want to have this ethnic cleanliness, you know, that the Serbs need to be Serbs only, and the Croats need to be, you know, and they even have languages now, would you believe it? They actually call it the Croatian language and they call it the Bosnian language. Even the Montenegros call it the language. And the differences are sort of like the difference between New York and New Jersey. Like, it's like that much of a difference. Mm. A few words here and there, I'll grant you that. But, you know, what the hell are you guys talking about? You know, the nationalistic mind is always innovative, you know.
Yeah, I mean, without the genocide, I wouldn't mind New Jersey being removed from the United States.
The Bridgian Tunnel guy.
Yeah, just saying.
Yeah.
No genocide, not an advocate of that. But yeah. Having gone to high school and college in New Jersey, I will say that the sun is just a bit brighter and the air is just a bit crisper in New York.
True, but it stays at that level. You can joke all you want.
Mm.
And the jokes would make you laugh, and you can certainly marry and be happy with a New Jersey woman for the rest of your life. And we'll all be singing a Bon Jovi song and a Frank Sinatra song. No big deal.
Yeah.
But that's where the joking ends. We had the same kind of thing, as I mentioned. Everything was fine, and we still joked about how the Croats would say this and how the Bosnian would say that. I mean, the biggest jokes were always at the Bosnians' expense.
Yeah.
Still today. The worst kinds were coming out during the Civil War, which was so bizarre. Even the Bosnians invented the jokes. During the biggest bloodshed, there were jokes every day. Like, I'll tell you one.
Please do.
The two Bosnian guys are walking through Sarajevo, not aware of the fact that they're actually entering the sniper field. And a shot rings out, and it misses the guy, but he cuts his ear off, right?
Okay.
And the other one jumps into the bushes, hiding, but the one who had his ear cut off starts frantically searching for, assuming he's searching for an ear, you know? And the guy from the bushes is yelling back to him, "What do you say? Fuck the stupid ear. Forget the stupid ear. Come and hide." He goes, "It's not that. I don't give a fuck about the ear. I had a cigarette behind it." So he's actually searching for a cigarette.
Yeah.
So it's crazy that it sounds. It comes from Bosnia. So, but all the joking stops when there's blood. You can kid all you want about New Jersey and whatnot.
Mm.
And, you know, the Bridgian Tunnel jokes.
Mm.
Fine. It's funny, you know. And there's a lot of truth to it, you know. That's the beauty of it, you know. But when the blood starts flowing, it just ceases to be funny.
Yeah. I think it's that way with a lot of things. It's the old saying, it's all fun and games. So someone gets hurt, it's like, not about like hurt feelings or anything, but I mean, there's a line at some point. Absolutely. Like, you know, kids bullying each other, whatever, like, don't, you know, don't hit people, don't touch other people. Mm. There's a line. But anyway, I don't want to dwell too much on this. I want to get back to this Cadillac metaphor of the 80s. How did music fit into this, particularly in Yugoslavia, and particularly the kind of music that you were making?
Well, pretty much the same. The fact that we were an open society, we were not oppressed.
When you were under Soviet rule.
No. We were the only country that said we famously call it the big no. Because back in the late 40s, to be more precise, back in 1948, Tito, the late president of Yugoslavia, loudly rejected any Soviet influence. And it was pretty close, because the Soviets were at the very border of Yugoslavia, coming from Hungary and Bulgaria. And
but other. There was communism.
So, our communism was a joke. It was a party at which you could be a member and get a better job, but nowhere near anything you can think of and imagine communism as it is. It was a big communist party. I kind of knew a lot of people that were members who couldn't care less being a member, just maybe giving you a better position at your workplace, and that's about it. My mother was a member of the Communist Party. There were typical benefits to just about anything. If you were in New Jersey and you're a member of the union over there, you get a better job.
Yeah.
Almost like that. Not to diminish the very existence of communism as it is, but any Yugoslav with common sense would tell you that the communism during Yugoslavia was nothing similar to any form of communism anywhere in the world. We were the most freely oriented society of all communist countries in the region. Our passport was the most wanted passport in Europe.
Because you could go straight to Western Europe.
You could go anywhere you wanted. And you were not required to have a special visa for most of the countries in the world, because... Oh, I'll give you another good example. And please, I don't want to leave any impressions of big Yugo nostalgic kind of a person and whatnot. These are simple facts that cannot be historically removed from the story.
Okay.
The interesting fact about how important Yugoslavia was at its heyday is summarized in the funeral of the late President Tito. In all of written history of humanity, this was by far the largest funeral ever.
Mm-hmm.
The reason President Carter couldn't attend is because he was either busy or sick, but he sent his mother. The very president of Soviet Union, Brezhnev, attended, next to another 200 presidents, premiers, ambassadors and whatnot. It was the largest funeral of all time. This just simply doesn't happen for some, you know, teeny weeny tiny, you know, reason. Back to the original subject. All this was reflected in how we felt as young people. I was born in 1962, so I was 18 when the Big Eight started.
Yeah.
The prime year for being old enough but yet young enough to do things. So naturally, all the music of the world was available to us. We had no restrictions on radio or television and whatnot. It was a famous TV guide that said 7:30 was announced, and everyone remembers it. It said American movie. It didn't say which one, but it said 7:30 after the news, you had the American movie. It's difficult to put it in a single sentence, but I'll attempt to answer like this. All the music that was good, that was progressive, that was new wave-ish, that was either jazz or whatnot, was available to us to hear, enjoy. Every imaginable world name actually had a concert in Belgrade and in Novi Sad. We watched Jethro Tull. Mm. We watched Deep Purple. We watched Elton John. Yeah. We watched Weather Report. We watched just about every imaginable name that was important at the time of their heyday.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the big deal. We didn't think of it as a big deal. So naturally, with all those influences, it's safe to say that we grew up listening to Pink Floyd and the Beatles and the Stones and all the good stuff that was happening. So it reflected, that influence reflected the music that was happening in the 80s. It was then interesting to mention that there was a record that kind of colorized the entire country. It was called, sort of like a literal translation would be a package arrangement, so like a package deal. One of the largest publishing companies, record companies in Yugoslavia, decided to announce to the world, to Yugoslavia, who are the most interesting new names in music of Yugoslavia. So even today, that record's being celebrated as the beginning of it all.
Mm.
It's called the package arrangement. So the five or six important names were introduced on that record.
Mm.
And it was such a powerful and influential record that the entire country was influenced by it. And all of a sudden, an explosion of bands was happening.
As a result of this one record.
Off of this one record. It was already known that these bands exist and whatnot, but it's sort of like it's different when you kind of put it in the Bible, you know?
Yeah.
All of a sudden you have it.
Canonized it.
You have it canonized. Good point. So all of a sudden the festivals were everywhere, and you could easily end up seeing two or three concerts a week. And even the government organized it in the following way, which is totally crazy. Here's what they call it. They call it by the key. It's a literal translation. Suppose there's a band in Novi Sad. And the organizers from the so-called cultural center of Novi Sad would invite this band for a talk. And they would tell them, we are sending you to Belgrade.
Yeah.
Everything's being paid for. Over there, you're being received by the band who's from Belgrade. And you two both are going to have a concert together. So when you finish a concert in Belgrade, then you both come back and play Novi Sad. And this was organized so that people would meet one another and they would travel. So this happened throughout the entire Yugoslav country. So with a few bands, I would see just about every major center in Yugoslavia and be a guest, and they would come back and play with us. We loved it. It was free of charge. I mean, you didn't have to pay for anything. We were given room and board and whatnot, and we enjoyed it. When you're young and someone takes you on a bus and you go play music, that was fun. That wasn't like, oh, I don't want to go, you know. And it worked. So we got to know each other. Back then, there were no internet things and stuff of that nature. TV, there was only two stations. You couldn't expect to see much on it, you know.
How old were you at this point?
Well, I started in 1976. I was almost 14.
Hmm.
I actually recorded my first long-playing record when I was 14.
Mm.
And I was a big shot when I was a kid, a big shot in the school. You know, I went to a first festival. I went for a first Yugoslav tour.
Yeah.
And I was immediately recognized as this young talent. The kid is good, you know.
Yeah.
And I was instantly popular, and many other musicians wanted me. So naturally, I played in many, many bands since then.
Yeah, sure.
But I was young enough, you know, to enjoy it, but old enough to understand that this was a good thing. You know, you went around. In my future answers, I just want to stress out that if I sound up about it, that's for a reason. It was good. I in no way intend to paint a picture that's better. I have many more reasons that are negative. based on everything you're about to ask me, which you heard me say before, then I would celebrate. And after all, you know, the payback time always comes decades later.
Yeah.
If the country goes through a civil war, the payback time comes decades later.
Yeah.
And it lasts for a long time, you know. So,
it's
go figure.
No, yeah, exactly. Go figure. The receipt comes after the damage has been done.
Plus like tax.
Plus tax. And tax with a lot of interest. Sorry.
And interest.
Spilled some water over here. This is with my left hand. You raised some interesting points about the 1980s, and it gets me almost nostalgic for a decade that I didn't live through. Mm. I was telling you earlier, I did a lot of research about music in Los Angeles in the 1980s.
Mm.
But it was a time of, some people look at the 80s and they think of, you know, subversiveness, of rebellion, of all that kind of stuff. But it was a time of great promise and of hopefulness, I think, more than anything, of the youth just thinking that anything is possible, more so whether in Yugoslavia or the United States, I think more so even in the 60s. The 60s was a time of, in my opinion, it was reactionary. You know, it was very reactionary coming out of World War II, very anti-establishment. The 80s was, I think, less reactionary and rebellious. It was more hopeful. I think it was more optimistic and less cynical. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass here. I didn't live through it.
No, you have a good point, but don't forget the LSD. You know, it was a big deal.
In the 80s or the 60s?
60s.
Yeah.
That was the age of the hallucination, and no wonder the free love and then lovey-dovey shit that was going down in Woodstock colored the whole decade and decades to come. So a natural extension without me philosophizing on it. You know, the 80s, I kind of think that all the madness of these crazy hairdos and the spandex and the makeups and all
it was coke fueled. Is that what you're going
to
say?
Well, generally speaking, I thought that was always funny. Kind of, they all looked like circus maniacs, you know, all of them. But
the glam metal.
Yeah. But my point was the MTV of the 80s. Now, no wonder Beavis and Butthead was so popular. You know, they were the parody to all of that. But bottom line is the melody was there. And ordinary people always react well to melody. Nowadays, there's almost no melody whatsoever. What? Harmony? Forget it. Committed suicide. No such thing. Today's music, there's only speech. There's only rhythmic speech and speaking smart phrases that you think you have discovered the secrets of life, you know, and existence, you know. So where's the fucking melody? Where's the beat? I want to dance. I want to have some fun, you know. Not necessarily Whitney Houston-ish, you know, but generally there's not much fun in all of this lately. It's all dark, and we enter the dark era of like, is not educated enough philosophers that are trying to tell us some bullshit stories that haven't even matured enough to know better. You know, that what does Beyonce have to offer to me? Please give it to me. I need to find out what wisdom you're going to have to offer to me. Naturally, I'm the Abbey Road kind of generation. There was quite a few messages that we were given through good melodies, you know.
That wasn't the 80s.
No, it continued through the 80s. That was the legacy of the 60s and 70s that just never stopped.
You did have melody. Absolutely. And messages and but proper philosophizing.
There's simply no leaders of any kind. Humanity is so stupid that it needs a leader. General populations always need a leader. There's no such person today in any form or fashion, in any field of our existence. There's no Churchills, not to mention that I either like or dislike a person. But it's a fact that we had Lenin and we had Kennedys and we had Martin Luther Kings, we had Gandhis and Mother Teresa, you name it. You can keep naming these people that were leaders of some kind. Muhammad Ali's, people that you looked up to. Who the fuck do you look up to today? Name one. But take your time.
I think, you know, I know you're asking facetiously, and I think maybe...
Yeah, but of course.
Is the American...
I know the answer.
Well, no, it's the American character in me. Part of me wants to respond to you and say, oh, well, you know, I don't need a leader. We can all just be individuals, and, you know, that's great, and think for ourselves and not be sheep. And when we have Stalin or Lenin or Mao
but we
or
are
whoever...
Sheep.
No...
big time.
Again, that's maybe the American baked into me. I don't think that that has to be the case. I think that you can
that's
break free
of
the herd.
Thinking, but sorry to cut in again. The fact remains, we are sheep.
What about you? You made music. That's anti-sheep.
Like sheep. True. But you know what?
Behavior, it's a creative endeavor.
Remember what Churchill said, what's the biggest argument against democracy?
Any other form of government?
No.
What?
Churchill's point was very simple and down to earth. The biggest argument against any form of democracy is a simple 5-minute talk to with an average voter.
Yes.
So... it was a well-known fact even back then that humanity is unintelligent, the majority. Therefore, it's an utmost necessity that there's a leader who presumably is positive.
Hopefully. But you got a lot of fuckers.
Well, that's my point. You said you disagree with that, and I said... show me the leader. I need to find one that I'm also going to look up to. There's no such person these days.
Well, I decline to comment on that. But on the subject of whether we need a leader inherently, I take issue with that premise. I don't think that there needs to be one sort of supreme.
I didn't say
dogma.
One. Okay. The more the better.
Yeah.
Train ain't running without a locomotive.
Okay. Yeah, fair.
The wagons are just going to be sitting at the fucking station. Someone's got to do the choo-choo part.
Well, for the choo-chooing, do you think that music... I mean, clearly it seems like perhaps you do. You yourself are a musician. Do you think that music can fill some of that for a country or a people or multiple peoples or youth or whatever?
True, but...
I'm asking you.
Yeah.
I'm not stating. I'm asking.
It can... but only
there can be messages in the music. You've mentioned Abbey Road.
Yeah, there were certainly big messages. And then after someone such as John Lennon became so well-known and popular, he took it upon his popularity to take advantage of that in a positive way. We still remember, as corny as it may sound to someone today, but Make Love Not War is one of the nicest things ever said. Whoever prefers war to love is not a friend of mine.
Mm.
And someone being so bluntly down to earth, simplistically saying, make love, not war, and the war is over if you want it, is a hero of mine. And he got to that point through his music first. We all first learned to love him and trust him. And therefore, he is a legitimate leader. And of course, you know what they have, what they all have in common?
They being the musicians, the leaders.
No, all the good leaders with good slogans, good messages. We all shot them to death. Whoever said anything, oh guys, come on, let's love one another. What? You're spoiling the fun. Whoever was... saying, I have a dream, I had a dream. What? Shut the fuck up. Shoot the motherfucker. Gandhi, let's all gather. Whoever said anything positive for humanity, we quickly put him aside so he doesn't spoil the fun.
Immortalized.
Yeah, 2 days ago there was another shooting at Coney Island. I'm not sure if you heard of it. Yeah, some lunatic ran out and shot a bunch of people. Coney Island. So, not to, you know, be a wise ass, but after 60 years of running around this planet, I'd be lying if I said I was optimistic.
Optimistic about what
about
exactly?
Just about anything, you know. I'm a big, most of my friends know me as a joker and a guy who likes to laugh a lot and have fun, not to push it under the carpet. But the general consensus in my understanding of the world is like, it's not fun, no more fun. It's just a bunch of fucking stupid men shooting.
I was talking to a jazz musician once. And I was asking him why he likes jazz and what jazz is about. And he said that jazz was about sitting at a piano and watching the world around you fall apart, your your relationships, your friendships, politics, whatever, and just laughing and drinking whiskey and banging on the piano keys.
Good point.
So it's a good, it's a rather nihilist point of view. It's not especially optimistic, and it makes me want to ask the question, did you have this? I don't blame you for the cynicism that you have now. I mean, I share a lot of it, to be honest. I am eternally, well, I mean, that's a separate thing. I won't get into that, but like, you know, I share a lot of the cynicism you have now. Has that been cultivated and developed over the last 40 years? Did you share that level of cynicism when you were making music in the 1980s?
No.
An idealist or an optimist or a hopeful or whatever?
None of the above.
What were you? What were you doing? What were you drawing material from if everything was fine and fucking dandy?
Robin Williams once said, and I'll steal this off of him, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. You know, I'll paraphrase that and adjust it to the 80s of my youth. I can't say that we were thinking too much just about anything. We were thinking that we were thinking. But these were not some deep thoughts by Jack Handy, if you know what that means. That would tell me that you watched SNL back in the 80s. But all kidding aside, we were talented young kids hungry to emulate the good sounds of the music that was around us. We loved the good sounds that were around us. We loved just about everything. We didn't discriminate against, you know, different types of music, such as either jazz or classic. I'm a violinist, by the way. You know?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think of you as a drummer.
Yeah.
Well, you trained in violin.
I started as a violinist at the age of 5. I graduated the elementary music school. I went into music high school learning the music theory.
Yeah.
And the obvious must was a piano. And then when my music teacher gave me a task to form a school band, I fantasized about playing guitar, which I just started learning. But most kids that were signing up for the audition were already accomplished guitar players. So being as fair as I was taught to be, I couldn't just take their seat because they were better than me. And guess what? No one has signed up to play drums said, fuck it, I'll do that.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up being a drummer. It was never my calling. I just discovered by chance, by accident, that I knew how to do that instantly. So I still play most other instruments, but my main thing was always drums. But, you know, most musicians that have a deeper understanding of music play more than a single instrument of their first choice. Again, we were not thinking too much of anything. We were, the main difference, I should say, between what I noticed today with youth, we were listening to music so much that it was almost religious. We had listening sessions at each other's houses, whoever was free to organize it, We were there that night, and we had, they call it binging today.
Yeah.
We would spend literally 5, 6, 7 hours listening, talking, discussing, analyzing, hearing it again. Oh, play it again, you know, turn the record to B-side, play number three, you know. Oh, let's go to Johnny's house on Friday. He just received a new Jethro Tull record. They would all gather then, listen and talk. I thought that was a, sort of like a parallel universe of our self-education and that deep analysis between respective, you know, sensibilities that made us what we turn out to be, successful in our own right when creating music. Because once you know your trade, it's only natural that you can emulate it, you know. Mm. How do you expect a baker to make a good piece of bread when he doesn't know anything about dough? You know? So without any smart-ass extra sentences, it wasn't me, it was all of us, literally. Most of my friends were like that. It didn't make me any special. We all listened to music fanatically. So the 80s were a result of the generation that was growing up in peace, that we were being given offers and choices to choose from that were not stipulated by any government or anyone. And we are free to know the world as much as possible back at the respective days of the 70s and the 80s. And it's only a natural conclusion that resulted in dozens and dozens of high-quality bands. As a matter of fact, we weren't only in Yugoslavia. We played in Poland, I played in England and played in Italy, we played in Austria, we played in Bulgaria, we played in Hungary a few times, like most countries surrounding. We performed at the Institute of Contemporary Arts back in 1982 for 3 weeks straight, right after David Bowie.
Mm.
And that was a big deal. We had the Vienna concert that was called the U-Wave, meaning Y-U-Wave. Instead of New Wave, we called it the U-Wave.
Okay. Yeah.
And the bus full of bands left from Novi Sad and performed there for a week.
Yeah.
That was a well-known fact that Yugoslavia was offering some good music. I had a kind of mini tour with one of my bands, EKV, throughout Italy. And it was, I actually met a person a few years back that remembers that, who kind of found out about me on the social media.
Yeah.
I was like, I was there. I'm like, what the hell, you know, which is the modern way of meeting people. So the conclusion is that the overall thing about, as far as cynicism is concerned, is that's also natural. You know the good old Jewish phrase that it says, I wish you had it, then you don't. It's the best curse you can tell to someone who you don't like. Obviously meaning something good, I wish you had it, then you don't.
Mm.
You know that?
Yeah.
So how can you not be cynical when you had such a great Cadillac during the 80s and all of a sudden there's blood? I mean, who wouldn't be pissed off? No, I'm not sure if I mentioned this, but I'll repeat what I told you before we started recording. The whole, I don't even know what proper word to use, the whole excitement about the 80s is understandable and natural to me. I was there. But when people ask, how do you explain such a good thing? I don't make too big a deal of it. I remember I told you that if it was so good and powerful, I would have expected much more of it. It's sort of like you invest all this time and everything into this great house, right? And you expect to last 1,000 years, then the first rain kind of melts it down. What the fuck? What kind of house was that? Apparently it wasn't that good. The music remains. I don't mean to sound too negative and too ironic and cynical, sarcastic, whatever. But, you know, you can piss all over it. You know, great music. It was fantastic, you know. Everybody loved it, you know. All the brotherhood and unity showed its real face, you know, the early 90s. As a matter of fact, most of the bands of the 80s, when the first skirmishes started happening between the parties that wanted to shoot one another, organized huge concerts in support of peace in Sarajevo, in Zagreb, in Belgrade. And there was even a famous bus tour that they put a huge stage on this bus on a big truck in a flatbed. And they went throughout Belgrade singing and calling upon people to stop the bullshit. You know, what the hell, you crazy? What are you? And the lyrics were funny.
Who was playing in this flatbed?
Well, just about members of every important band at the time from Belgrade. At least six or seven bands that were well known and celebrated throughout Yugoslavia. And the lyrics were funny because it said, I'd much rather fuck than shoot. That was one of the messages, you know? Like, what are you fucking crazy? Let's just get laid, you know. Bolje da tucam nego da pucam. That was the literal. Say, I'd much rather get laid than shoot, you know. There was a huge level of humor involved, but the message was clear. Stop the bullshit. And there was a huge concert in Sarajevo, which was the very center, ground zero of all the bullshit, which most of the bands appeared and appealed for peace and stopped it, but no one listened. And it was already too late. They weren't aware of it at the time. So there's a mixture of feelings when you ask me about how do you define the 80s. It's both ways, black and white.
I think that any answer which is not both and is generally incomplete. Nothing is ever black and white.
Yeah, definitely.
It's always both.
Yeah. Tell that to my ex.
Look, I mean, there's so many different directions I could steer this. You mentioned quite a few things. I want to just ask maybe two or three follow-up questions on this before getting to the final questions here. The first is about you and your friends who were all listening to the same kinds of music. You would have the listening parties of sorts where you would just sort of binge on this music. This is not, you know, Hegel or Kierkegaard or anything. It's much lower brow than that. But I was always a fan of the Fast and Furious series, and in the third Fast and Furious movie, there's a line where Han is a character talking to Sean, and the character he says, "Who you choose to be around you lets you know who you are." And I think that the point of that is that who you surround yourself with, you know, friends, relationships, whatever, it does rub off on you inevitably. Mm-hmm. No one's fully immune. Right. So, you know, I was asking, I think about how you got your start in music and rock and roll. You and your friends would sit around and you would have these binge parties. But the fact of the matter is that you became a rock star and a lot of them did not. Maybe some of them did. But, you know, there's only so much space on stage, no matter how talented. Maybe some of it has to do with talent. Maybe some of it has to do with luck. Maybe some of it has to do with whatever else. You know, why? I mean, I'm not asking you to puff yourself up here, but I'm just curious. You guys were, the 80s was a Cadillac. It was great. You were all listening to the same kind of music. There was a lot of people who went to the music school that you did. You were all in Yugoslavia. What was it that allowed you to break through that, you know, perhaps wasn't afforded to some of your peers who were at the same binge listening parties that you attended? Does the question make sense? I don't know.
Well, it's a simple answer. I was good. Still am. It's just like
raw talent.
Yeah. It's just like anything. It makes no difference whether you're talking about musicianship or shoemaking. You know who the best shoemaker in town is, so you go to him. We weren't just talented. I should say that we were also educated, and we were force educated next to our binge listening. There was no such thing as an option that you were given, that whether you want or don't want to be in school, you went, trust me, you went to school.
Yeah, get a boot in the ass.
The way I became a musician was not up to me. My grandfather came in, who happened to be a violinist. And since that was the patriarch of the family, he just announced it. He didn't ask. He was making an announcement to my father and my mother. I'm taking the kid on Monday to music school. He's going to start on a violin, such as his grandfather. There was no if, but, or maybes at the time. So I took a hand to my grandfather, who took me to school, and next thing you know, I'm practicing violin. So most of the children from my generation were attending an extra curriculum, not only an elementary or high school, and we were all given extra choices of languages and whatnot. Most of my generation speaks three or four languages, not to make it all sound all important, but it's a simple fact of the generation that was brought up. Education was big at the time, which pisses me off even more. Because when people ask me a strangest question of, well, who do you blame for the Civil War? I said, us. We simply didn't do anything. Like most wars, it's possible to stop things if you want it, but no one just exploded. The smartest people who had ability to stop it simply didn't. Same thing for the latest voting that took place here. The intellectuals always stay aside and leave the assholes to take the cream off of the pie, you know? Mm. So the reason why I became different is because I started very early. And there were no that many drummers at the time, I should say. It wasn't a simple thing to just play drums just like that, you know. But I loved it so much that I remember I practiced until I had bloody blisters. You know, I loved it so much, my mother went crazy. She was like, you got to take a pause from time to time. It just simply didn't until I became so capable that everybody just wanted me. Naturally, I, as a hyper person, I just took every job I could. I loved it.
Yeah.
All I wanted is to play. You know, the extrovert, you know, the one who wanted to be always there where the fun is. On the other hand, there's another thing that came to me in the past decade or so that's a natural conclusion on all these things combined. When you sign up for any school of any kind that's specialized for something, since we're talking about music school, I'll focus on that. They'll teach you how to read and write music, how to play your instrument, how to tune your instrument, how to do this and that. That's strictly sort of like this technical thing about how to achieve being a technically capable musician. No one's going to teach you how to make it in the business and how to position yourself properly, how to manage yourself. Therefore, we have generally non-musicians who are managers, because you simply don't have time to do that, because you're so in love with the part that's music creating that you don't have time to manage yourself. I don't necessarily say that you need to be your own manager, no. But the difference between you not knowing anything about it, it's a very expensive school that you pay the hard way until you figure out, you know, what does it take to successfully position yourself in the realm of music business, you're already fucked. You know, someone else is taking your money.
Mm.
So I suggested quite a few years back to the dean of the music academy in Novi Sad that why don't you at least have guest teachers, such as myself, who are going to be talking about aspects of. So there's a joke about the painters academy, you know, the art academy says that, okay, so I graduated as a painter. I can paint myself, and that's about it. You know, what are you going to do with it? Na položio sam likom na akademiju, sad mogu da se slikam. It's knowledge of the technical aspect of your trade, and that's about it. So what do I do now? You know, those things no one teaches.
Yeah, the intangibles.
Back to the binging parties. All that was exactly what I'm describing right now. Because we weren't just discussing, oh, check out the bass player, or check out the drummer or the singer. We were also fantasizing, oh, how do you think they did this or did that? Why do you think they chose that kind of a wardrobe? Why do you think the drums are placed right there? Yo, look at the bus they're traveling on. You know what? All these thousands and thousands of questions. But just about everything it takes for somebody to get deeper into the knowledge of your trade.
Mm.
So I was always hungry to learn and hungry to travel, and then, you know, the talent combined with that was the answer. You know, it wasn't too big a deal for me anyway. Plus, there's a question about stage fright. I still don't know what the hell that is, you know. I was always feeling sorry for people. Don't think of me as a clown now that I can't wait to jump and make a fool of myself on stage. But not to say that I wasn't at least concerned a few times, you know. I played in front of 100,000 people. That's a strange feeling, you know. You walk up on stage, you see this sea of people. Like, oh, what the hell? But as soon as my ass, you know, sits on the throne, it all disappears, and you do what you do best.
Mm.
So the stage fright part and whatnot, these are all almost therapeutic processes, you know, that people need to be taught, you know, when you're doing such a thing as being a musician.
Mm. Yeah. I think part of what you said about, you know, figuring out how the game actually works, how the business actually works is an important thing.
Sorry, I just remembered one more thing.
Please.
Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
I'm inclined to say the following thing, which comes from experience and simple observing the years of me being in it. The majority of what we know as people on this planet, of people who are quote-unquote successful in the thing, are not the best. They're just the best managed. It's generally not the best musicians, not the best performers, not the best singers. A few that we all love universally are, but the vast majority aren't. And here's an interesting theory of a good friend of mine, a fellow musician. He goes, you know what? I always made more money when I played the top 40 bands that the bands weren't so good. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? He goes, hear me out. It makes a lot of sense. When there's an ordinary club, I'm not talking about big Wembley stages and famous names. I'm talking top 40. When the ordinary musician entertainment takes place, that the band appears and a few hundred people are dancing to the music. For some reason, more tips were coming to the band when the band was not so good, I repeat myself. And he explains it the following way. There's something in all of us that kind of creates a distance between a very good, excellent performer that's all nice and dandy. You always like feel intimidated because there's this flashy thing on stage and you feel this distance, you're unable to connect so much. But when there's someone closer to you, more quote-unquote average, you feel more like you're the part of the crowd. I can do that. That's not that too big a deal, you know. I can sing like that idiot. No big deal. So everybody starts singing almost such as a thing at home. When someone picks up a guitar, what happens next? Everyone sing it. It doesn't matter. You don't know all the chords and everything. That's sort of like the oldest DNA thing in all of us. You know, somebody picks up a guitar at the beach, you're not like, that's not the right chord. You just enjoy it. So this strange thing about how humanity enjoys art in any form is this is to be discussed on different levels, you know. Everyone walks into the Metropolitan Museum of Art and stands in awe in front of David's statue, right? You know, they're like in silent awe, you know, like, oh my God, this is God's creation, you know. When you see some other structure, you're more inclined to even make a joke about it. All these things need to be taught at the academy.
Yeah. It's not
the appreciate most. The average.
Appreciate, well, there's something relatable almost, I guess, about the average. You don't want to be, you look at like a lot of actors, you know, famous Hollywood actors, and I think the reason...
Give me a break, Sylvester Stallone's an actor. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, the difference between actors and models, the actors, I think, look like us. They look like the everyman, whereas... I mean, you know, they're obviously they're good looking, but more so than, you know, male models who look sort of like more like women, to be honest, with their cheekbones and their fucking haircuts and whatever. And I think there's something to be said about you draw a distinction between the mega act and like someone who's pretty good. Someone who's pretty good is probably more everymanish.
Yeah, not everyone could be Laurence Olivier.
Yeah. Can I just ask you two more questions here? I want to be respectful of your time, but is that all right? Yeah. All right, I will.
I already had sex today, so go ahead.
So, you know, or actually there's three here, but I'll ask you, I'll begin with the two. We'll see if we get to the third. The first is about keeping focus on your music career. When you're on the road, you know, life on the road is full of sex and drugs and girls and moving around every other night. How do you stay focused maybe on the art and not get lost? I watched, was it The Last Waltz? It's a documentary about the band.
You don't.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, how do you not get you swallowed don't. Up by the road?
You don't. I don't think that that's a possibility, because if it was a single person... then you focus on the story of a single human being. That's a totally different point compared to a band. How the hell do you control a single person, let alone five plus? So my answer to you is completely of an individual experience. I don't pretend to know the formula, because I don't believe in one being in existence. It's certainly not something I look at as difficult. I actually am the oldest survivor of the band I was most famous for being a member of, because they all died, drug-related or disease-related and whatnot. And most of my generation is smelling the flowers from underneath these days because of the dance they took upon with substances and whatnot, not to mention the stress and the life that took place after civil wars. But remembering the good old days and what you mentioned as a stereotypical thing of sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all the girls involved, I was never personally too keen on experimenting with drugs per se. To me, a few cold beers were more than enough, you know, to satisfy the evening or whatnot, not to avoid your question. But the focus to me personally was always music first. I loved it. I'm so in love with it today that I'm actually known to be a very fruitful musician. That I In most of these encyclopedias, I'm on a few dozen pages. Mm. Oh, you played with them too? Oh, yeah. Mm. To me, that was the food. It was not the unhappy childhood, you know, that my first sex wasn't with my uncle, so I didn't have to, you know, answer to therapies, and I didn't have to swallow drugs to, you know, make my pain go away, so to speak.
Mm.
If you ask me what my preference is, I always liked the dark and the darkness and the dark themes, and I never liked happy. If you present to me any humor in music, I'd give you a slap on the face. I can't stand humor in music. To me, that's two things that simply don't go together well. And when I hear bands today, like they're making a joke, you know, while they're playing, not to sound too like serious and whatnot, a good satire is fine.
Mm.
You know, a good line and the lyrics is fine. But when they make funny songs, I simply don't like that. It's not my cup of tea, I should say that much.
Sure.
But so I drew on darkness from that point. I didn't have to take any substances to draw from that well. So my answer is, again, it's an individual thing. I wouldn't be able to offer you a better answer than that was a general thing. I only gave you my own perspective on it.
What about your own perspective about life after music? I suppose music never ends, but what do you do once you've been a rock star and then you have to maybe return to civilization and leave the days behind you?
You never really return. You keep living that kind of a dream. It's just a question how realistic you are and how stupid you may become if you don't watch the fine line that you don't cross no longer. You know,
the worst thing you can see. What line?
But the fine line that you see people today that are still thinking they're under the limelight, you know, acting like fools, you know, doing what they are not able to do any longer. I'm 60, you know, I don't mind. I'll play tomorrow. I'll play tonight. That's not the point. It's performing music. I'm talking more about behaviors, you know, like that. Like I know a few people that have turned into clowns, you know, looking
Jesters.
Like idiots, like clowns. Truly, like clowns. Hey, old man. Now it's 2022.
Yeah.
Hey, take your pill.
Yeah.
No, not the Viagra. No, the other one. You know, the one that calms you down. You know, like go home and watch a black and white movie. You know, and shut the fuck up. You're not eligible any longer. You know, That's what I'm talking about. But when you talk about playing music, I'm very active in the studio. I produce, I write, I arrange, I do what musicians do. I don't jump on stage, I don't do silly moves any longer, and certainly don't take drugs per se, you know, to make my world all nice and colorful.
The love affair with music is a lifelong affliction.
Yeah. Being a musician is one of the nicest things a person can have. You simply, not that I am, but I understand what loneliness is all about. When a musician, you're never lonely. Never. You simply don't know what loneliness is. Being a musician is the greatest gift from the heavens. You just never have any downward thoughts that could possibly bring you so deep into depressive thoughts when a musician. That always, at least speaking for myself, always finds a way to sort of entertain your brain in different ways. I recently watched a so-called Beethoven binge. The Dortmund Symphonic Orchestra performed all 9 symphonies. You know, can you imagine the joy of that? The whole shebang from 1 to 9. And they ended up with the Slovak Bratislava choir and the open. It was like, hey, what the hell is anyone complaining about? You know, we just heard Beethoven, you know? My day is complete and it'll last for another week with the impressions it gave to me. When they started the fifth at the music school, new concert hall, I burst into tears. It was just you know, I hope I don't sound pathetic, you know, when I say this thing, but it's the beauty of this strange universal mathematical craze that's called music. Everything makes sense with music. Not when you listen to Weird Al Yankovic. I'm talking about music.
And yet there are a lot of musicians who do kill themselves very young, whether by gun, pills, or exhaustion.
Just like humanity.
A lot of lonely musicians.
Yeah, but we have a tendency to notice those souls because they're more exposed.
Because they're
to
in
us.
The limelight. Yeah, fair play.
If you looked into statistics of how many young people shoot themselves and fall upon different problems in life, but you don't know off of it, all of a sudden, what's his name?
Right, it's not representative.
What's his name? The 27 Club.
Kurt Cobain
shot himself. Whoa, big fucking deal. So he had some trouble and shot himself. That very day, at least another 5,000 kids shot themselves throughout the planet because they had far deeper problems than the Mr. Yeah. Drug Me Out motherfucker.
Not a Nirvana fan, I can hear.
I don't even care about the fan or not fan part.
Yeah.
It's a human being that decided that the movie's over.
Yes.
You know, just so happens to be he was a musician and a well-known one. You know,
it's not representative. It's like a lot of issues. It's you take one example out of context and then that happens to be a well-known example.
Yeah.
So you assume that that's the rule, but it's
just part of our general existence. I don't pay too much attention to it, you know.
Yeah.
Another motherfucker who shoots himself gives us more ozone.
Well, we've covered a lot of stuff. Is there anything you wanted me to ask you about that I didn't?
Yeah, where's the beer?
Where's the beer? It's coming. cold beer is on the way.
As you may have noticed, I'm a big blabber. I like talking to new people, not talking in general. It's part of the greater fun I have when I meet someone and we talk. It's a lot of fun getting to know what other souls are thinking. You know,
yeah.
I never like the quiet ones.
The quiet ones.
You read my fucking ass. You know, I'm not sitting there. It's like I actually have a girlfriend who's like that. Just a friend, not a girlfriend. You know? So every time I ask her a question, she keeps quiet. I'm like, Today, I want the answer today. If you don't mind, today, while the day's still in the date. You know, I like being a blabber. It's a lot of fun to me. Like, I don't like reading between the lines and whatnot. Of course, we all can. No, but why did Mother Nature give us the ability to speak? So I have to fucking read what you want. Are you hungry? Y-E-S or N-O. Yeah, like, she's looking at me like. So is that a yes or no?
Read between the lines.
Yeah. There's plenty of stuff in life that you are forced to read between the lines. You know, that's like meeting a bear. The first thing you want to know whether he's hungry or not. And he sure as hell is going to give you a quick answer.
And you'll find out.
You better run.
You'll find out.
Yeah.
By the time you find out, it's too late. It won't be your problem anymore.
Yeah. You're sure as hell not wasting ozone any longer.
No, you're not.
Yeah, to answer your question in a different way, I have generally don't have too many questions and not too many answers either. Who gives a fuck? We're here just for a short period of time. It simplistically put, I always vote for some barbecue and some cold beer and some simplicity, you know. I'll add an interesting point for your thoughts.
Please.
Which is a wider question pertaining to our existence.
Okay.
Which is an interesting thing that happened by a strange accident. I have a very close friend, a woman, who happens to be a music teacher. Mm-hmm. She teaches up to the eighth grade, you know, she teaches music. So we always talk about music and music-related stuff. And then we, of course, spread the word into greater philosophy and life and these general, you know how women want to know about these greater questions. You know,
men want to know about them too.
No, we all. Men just don't anything. Men just are. And it's exactly the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
So she says, well, no, you're kind of too harsh on, you know, things like, there's plenty of women that did bad things. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I says, let's have a contest here. So just to first tell you what the score is, then I'll tell you what the contest is all about. So far, I have 2,800,700,572 points. And she has 14. You can assume that I'm kind of a leading in this contest. And leading quite successfully. Out of the 14 points she has, I gave her 13 so she doesn't feel bad. The ones that she earned was kind of an okay point, you know. And the deal is the following. I had a simple question. Name one, not two, one woman that created some global shit. Take your time. I'll wait. As a matter of fact, I'll go have dinner. Rest and train your vocal cords. I need a swift answer within any time you feel like you need to give me a prompt answer. But I'll help you too. There isn't any. All, not some, all bullshit comes and is created by men and men alone. Men are the genetic mistake of Mother Nature and men alone. All bullshit that ever took place, including the invention of God, comes from men. Women are simply not interested or capable of thinking of such bullshit. You know, a woman, by the laws of nature, is created to simply create whether she likes it or not. She's relaxed. She cares about, not to simplify it, she cares about simple things that are life-important things, such as birth, taking care of the offspring, you know, like ordinary good things. Men, on the other hand, don't have the capacity, meaning brain, to come up with anything smart, so they drill tunnels to show off to a woman so maybe they get laid. That's just about anything. I described to you the entire history of humanity. Tunnels and pussy. That's about it. Anything outside of that is a lie. But here's another point. You need to blame women for that to a great degree. I'll tell you why. Most civilized laws will tell you that you are an accessory to a crime if you don't do anything and you've seen one. When you see an accident on the side of the road, it's your duty to stop and assist. If you see a crime being committed, it's your duty to inform upon it. Since women obviously observe men for thousands of years, and they don't do anything about it, is the part that the shifts the blame to them too, you know? And I even had the formula to kind of save the humanity. You know, like when they have these beauty pageants and they all answer like, peace on earth, You know how they go out with their tits and they wave their tiny asses and they go like, oh yeah, peace on earth. What do you wish for the world? Peace, you know? The fuck do you know? Who told you to say that, bitch? Anyway, my point is, women can achieve peace on earth within 48 hours. There'd be some blood, I'll grant you that. And it's a simple formula. I know it's going to sound funny and whatnot, but it's true. No pussy! There'd be some blood flowing. You know, there'd be some death, I'm sure. There's death anyway. So we'll all hail them as heroes down the road. But after 48 hours, when they all finally call one upon tomorrow at noon, yet at noon, starting tomorrow noon, not one of you bitches will give pussy to anyone. That, no jerk-offs, no blowjobs, nothing. No sex from tomorrow noontime until they shut the fuck up. And there's peace on earth. In 48 hours, imagine us. Hey, what's the pussy? No pussy. Lay your arms down. Go to work. You know, shut the fuck. You can watch. You can watch football. You can watch football. You can watch. But before that, stop the fucking shooting and, you know, like, go to work. Simple. But no, they'll never be close enough friends, you know, for some reason. And we'd be still shooting because that's the fun we think we are producing these days on planet Earth. I know I sound like Dalai Lama's best friend, but this asshole is also an enemy of mine. I just heard him say a few years back.
The Dalai Lama, this is the asshole you're referring to.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Not what the idiot said. I know he's almighty, old president, all connected with those fucking brass balls he's hitting all the time, you know. Fucking boom! Oh, well, how enlightened you motherfucker are, you know. Get your different glasses, you blind motherfucker. He said the music is not important at all. No shit, Sherlock. You've been hitting that brass ball. That's all you can fucking figure out so far. No, he pissed the shit out of me off. Oh, man. Music is not important. Huh? Have a different note? Oh, no, just this. They're all sitting around. How fun, huh? Has written to it. Yeah. Like didgeridoo from Tibet. Fucking digested already. Let's have a beer. Fuck this. Are we done?
We're done.
Yeah, thank you.